Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial meeting. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Wharton Law School of Visibility Reserve. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Wharton. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on sex and reproduction when we come back. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. It says, by what way is it that the light is parted? Or if we paraphrased it, it would say, by what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated? Now imagine asking a question like that 4,000 years ago. Today, of course, it's a simple question, and the student answers by saying, well, by passing it through the prism of the spectroscope. But who could have known about a spectroscope 4,000 years ago in Job's day? Now, when we heat a metal red hot, or we heat any substance until it is incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays of light, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on the graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star out in the cosmos, we only have to pass that light ray through the spectroscope to see what the composition of that star is and the proportion of each of its ingredients. And this division of light rays is always constant, and it doesn't vary in the least particular. And in that way, we can always rely upon those results. Spectroscopic analysis is an exact science, and this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. So this places us in a quandary, because either Job knew this 4,000 years ago, or a supernatural wisdom is being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And it's one more of the many lessons that I teach in my Mosaic Law School here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing called sex and reproduction. I mentioned last time that sex and reproduction are about as normal as going to the bathroom. It's a normal part and parcel, designed and built right into your body. So if you have sexual urges and sexual desires, just keep in mind that that's perfectly normal. But in human beings, it's regulated and controlled by law. In animals, I mentioned this to you last time, describing a bull going over to investigate a cow. It may be natural, but it's not dinnertime conversation. And I pointed out that what we're seeing on our television screens and on our and in our movies and magazines and so on is nothing short of promiscuity or open oral sex or just plain perversion, as we see in these sex flicks that we get in our motel rooms or we subscribe to over satellite television. We Americans have been immersed in sex and sexual misconduct, sexual perversion of every kind and description. In fact, I showed you last time in the Bible, the Apostle Paul made an observation. He says, it is so bad that it isn't even mentioned among the Gentiles. I mean, the foreign people that we call pagans, I mean, the sexual acts and the perversion that goes on isn't even mentioned by those people. That's why I said, you know, there's polite ways and polite conversation, and then, you know, you can get into some pretty raunchy stuff. Americans are into pretty raunchy stuff, and it's right there for your little children to learn in their schools, in sex education class. I don't really think that that's the place to be teaching sex education in public school by Planned Parenthood and some of these other organizations. I think the Bible is probably the better source of sex education. That's why I thought I'd put the series of programs on. Let's take a look at sex and reproduction from the point of view of the Bible and the point of view of your Creator and see what he had to say about it. I mean, after all, he's the designer of it. There certainly isn't anything to be ashamed of. It's a part and parcel of human beings and human behavior. But again, it's regulated and controlled, and there are punishments or penalties. In fact, last time I covered the capital felonies, and I said, well, Jesus, here's adultery. That's a capital felony. When we take a look at punishment as a whole, there are 24 capital crimes, 24 things that you can do in life that get you killed, get you stoned to death or burned or something, get your life taken away. There are 28 crimes or 28 things that you can do that'll get you punished. They don't necessarily involve death.
It could be something else. So let's run over those 28, of which 11 of the 28 punishments are applied to sexual misconduct. 11, that's 39%. In other words, if you were to take 10 crimes, 4 of those crimes are sex crimes. Now, sex is a pretty important topic in the Bible. 40% of the punishments apply to adultery, just one of the 10 commandments. I mean, you can murder somebody and you can get a punishment. It's typically death. There's 2 or 3 punishments for killing somebody. You could get banished to a city of refuge. That's banishment, excommunication. But in sex crimes, there are 11 punishments. Here's what they are. The 11 punishments. You can be burned at the stake. You can be stoned to death. Or you could be excommunicated from your society or your church. You could have your hand cut off. You could die childless. You could be forced to marry this girl. You could lose your blessings. Or you could suffer from a sore sickness, a disease, a plague, or suffer from a swelled belly. Swelled belly. That's kind of unusual. There's actually a law in here that deals with the swelled belly in Numbers 5, verses 11 through 31. Let's take a look at some of these crimes over here and see how God deals with this thing of sex crimes or sexual perversion. In Numbers 5, see if I can flip over here to Numbers chapter 5, verse 11. There's a little story over here. It says, but if he be not able to bring to 5, am I in the right place here? 5, verse 11. Nope, that doesn't seem to be the right story. Let's take a look at, I'm going to have to back off on that one. That's the wrong number on there, and I'm going to make a little notation right here. Let me draw a little arrow. I do that once in a while. It's probably in some other book. Let me just take a look at some sex crimes here from my list. I'll just pick out another one over here called copulation. That's number 23. So I'll flip back in my book here to number 23. Copulation. What in the world is that? You almost have to look that up in a dictionary to find out, don't you? Number 23. Let's see what we got here. Here we go. If you violate this law, it's a health law. Copulation, it's a health law. And there's a couple of problems or punishments that come from it. You can get a contagious disease or a bacterial infection. Contagious disease or a bacterial infection. Could that be something like AIDS, gonorrhea, syphilis? All right, let's take a look at the statute itself. It's in Leviticus 15, verses 16 through 18. It says, if any man's seed of copulation, that's called semen, go out from him, then he shall wash all of his flesh in water and be unclean until the even. And every garment and every skin whereupon is the seed of copulation shall be washed with water and be unclean until the even. And the woman also with whom man shall lie with seed of copulation, they shall both bathe themselves in water and be unclean until the even. In Leviticus 15:32, this is the law of him that has an issue and of him whose seed goeth from him and is defiled therewith. Defiled therewith. Now, you know, urine is one of 32 body fluids. But, you know, if you get urine on you, you go wash your hands. And you know, if you're like I am, you know, your granny probably taught you that when you go to the bathroom, you have to wash your hands every time. Because you don't want that feces, you know, that you might have gotten on your fingers or that urine that you might have gotten on you to infect you with some kind of a disease or a bacteria. And it's called elementary hygiene. When I went to public school, they taught us that when you're drinking water out of the water fountain, you don't want to put your mouth over the ball. I used to have those balls when I was a kid. And the water shot up from the center of this ball. And you drank water. Well, some kids would put their mouth right down on top of the ball to drink. And it was common practice, you know, for some kid, he'd be drinking a Coke, and he'd pass the Coke to his buddy, and his buddy would take a drink, and he'd pass it back, and one thing and another. And then we found out that, ooh, wait a minute, now that's not very sanitary. That's not very hygienic. And you're exactly right. That's not very hygienic. It's a vehicle, it's a methodology by which we can pass disease pathogens, like hepatitis, for instance, from one person to another. Or they try to tell us now, I don't know how true this is, they say that AIDS is not passed, you know, casually, that it's done through sex. And I'm sitting there saying, excuse me, but it seems that this AIDS virus is found in all 32 body fluids, you know, like your earwax, saliva, urine, feces, blood, you know, all of your body juices over here can contain this AIDS virus. So it would seem like to me that you need to be very careful about this disease thing. And indeed, in this statute here, we find that you need to be very careful about the semen because it's a body fluid and it contains disease pathogens. And he tells you very plainly, here's your creator. Now he's telling you, if you get this body fluid on you, which you are going to get it on you if you're having sex, boys and girls, that you need to wash it off Why is that? Well, here's an interesting little piece of science for you. You know, but when you get a heart transplant, there's a rejection factor. So they have to give you certain drugs, you know, to keep your body from rejecting the new heart, the new kidney. Semen is the only body fluid that has no rejection to it. And indeed, it can't have, because if this semen, which is transferred from the male to the female, were to be rejected by the female, there could never be reproduction, could there? Excuse me. Couldn't be any reproduction if there was rejection. And that's what makes this semen like plutonium. And that's why you have to have a law here that regulates and governs it and instructs you and says, now, boys and girls, this stuff doesn't have any rejection factor to it. So when it's ingested into your body won't reject it. The white corpuscles will not come out and attack it and destroy it. It will welcome it and accept it. And this is why you find that among sodomites that disease is so prevalent, sexually transmitted diseases, but among lesbians it isn't. And that's because the seed of copulation is not present in lesbian sexual activity, whereas it is present in male sexual activity. And that's the reason for this law. And that's the reason for the law that prohibits sodomy. And that's because it spreads disease. And if you'll take a look, the average sodomite dies at age 45. That is, men who practice homosexual behavior die on average at age 45, unless they die from AIDS, which in that case then brings the average down to age 39. 39 isn't a ripe old age. And as I mentioned to you time and again, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty, and you ought to be aware of it. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. I'm just here to tell you that there's a cause and effect relationship that goes with it. So if you want to adopt the sodomite lifestyle, get after it. It's legal. The law provides for it. But if you do, there's a second law over here that maybe you had not considered. And the law of God is still in full force and effect, and it affects you whether you like it or not. And you can go to Congress and pass all of the gay, lesbian legislation that you want, but it isn't going to change anything here as it relates to sickness and disease. Now remember, there are 11 of these punishments, 11 ways that God can punish you. And this wrong use of copulation, this misuse of semen, this failure to wash it off. Now, it's not any big deal here in the United States, because in our bedroom, we have a shower. Most Americans have showers in their master bedroom. So when mom and dad have sex and they have the seed of copulation on them, they go take a shower, clean up, and that's the end of it. We have automatic washers and dryers, so if it's on your bedclothes, your sheets, or pillowcases, or whatever happens to get on, you put it in the washer and you wash it and dry it, and it's no problem. Back in Moses' day, it was a little bit more of a problem. Washing clothes, you know, they didn't have a Maytag. Well, not that we know of. And you want to keep that in mind, boys and girls, wherever you live, that this is a highly dangerous body fluid, and it needs to be treated with care, and it needs to be disposed of properly. That's the purpose for number 23. Then we covered, let me circle these off here as we cover each one of these. That's number 5 on my list. Number 7 was number 2, adultery. Now, we talked about divorce, we talked about fornication. Here's another interesting law over here as it relates to sex, called genitals. And the other day I got a report in every day across my desk on these various and sundry reports, and there was a report of a lady who had torn her husband's genitals off with her bare hands. I'm looking for number 47 here on genitals. Gifts. Here it is right here. Number 47, yeah, tore this guy's genitals off with her bare hands. Kind of reminded me of this lady Bobbitt. Remember, she cut her husband's penis off? We read stories like that once in a while. I don't think it's very pervasive or widespread, but once in a while, it's a pretty sensational story when it happens. I think that's why it probably makes the papers. But in Deuteronomy 23, verse 1, it talks about your privy member, P-R-I-V-Y member. Well, in Deuteronomy 25, verse 11 and 12, talking about genitals, when men strive together, one with another, two guys are having a barroom brawl, and the wife of the one draws near for to deliver her husband out of the hand of him that smites him, and she puts forth her hand, and she takes him by the secrets, takes him by his testicles, then you shall cut off her hand, and your eye shall not pity her. Did you get that statute? Well, that's not kind and gentle, kids. Not kind and gentle at all. Now, the example that's used, if two guys were having a fight, it wouldn't make any difference if it was the wife that took her husband by his genitals and then tore him off. The penalty or the punishment that is prescribed by God himself is to cut her hand off. Same thing with that Bobbitt woman. The penalty that is prescribed here in the scriptures is to cut her hand off. Now, of course, here in America, we wouldn't think of doing that. I don't know about Saudi Arabia. They get a little bit testy over there. But here in America, of course, we don't practice the law of God. We banish that. This law is totally unacceptable here in the United States. And that's why I'm reporting it to you, because there was a time when we practiced some of this law. I don't say that we ever practiced all of it here in America, but we practiced more of it years ago than we practice today. And I would contend that we got a better result from it. This is just one more of those laws. Cut off her hand. Now, cutting off somebody's hand only occurs one time in the Bible. This is the only crime prescribed in the Bible for cutting off your hand. Now, the Arabians do it for theft, but then they practice the Quran. They don't practice the Mosaic law. They have a different God. They have a different holy book. They have a different legal system, and they have a different program. And when somebody steals, they cut their hands off. Under the Mosaic law, you don't cut people's hands off for theft, but you do cut somebody's hand off for grabbing a man by his secret parts or by his genitals. All right, so I just thought I'd share that with you. Now, I want to show you one more thing here. God doesn't have a very bright outlook on handicapped people either. It says in Leviticus 21:20, somebody that's crook-backed or a dwarf or that has a blemish or his eye or be scurvy or scabbed or has his stones broken, stones meaning his testicles, broken, crushed, or castrated. Well, what's the context of that? Let me give it to you. It's in Leviticus 21. Let me see if I can flip over here to Leviticus 21. I was down at our post office the other day, took a guy down to the post office, and we got a handicapped zone. We have 545 people that live here in our postal zone, they informed me the other day. 545 people, and we have a handicapped zone in front of our post office. The law provides for that. In fact, it mandates it. The only problem here is that we don't have any handicapped people here in our postal zone. So why do we need a handicapped zone? Well, because that's what the law provides for. Now, handicapped people are pretty common here in America. They used to be pretty rare. I can remember as a kid, there was a man from World War I who had no legs, and he had this little cart. It was a little flat dolly is what it was. It wasn't really a cart. It was a flat dolly. And he pushed himself around with a couple of handheld thingies with rubber pads on, and he sold pencils on the street corner at 4th and F Street in front of Montgomery Ward's store every day. That's where he made his living. That was when I was a little kid during World War II. He was a sight to behold. Here was a man who was pretty short. All that was left, his legs were cut off right at his hips. And so he sat on his little cart, his little dolly. Now that, to me, as a boy, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, was quite a sight. And it's the only guy that I know of as a child. It's the only handicapped person I'd ever seen. That's how rare handicap or wheelchairs and such things were. Not that they weren't around, but just unusual. Well, listen to this. In Leviticus 21, verse 20, it says, starting in verse 16, that Levites must be physically perfect. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak unto Aaron, saying, whosoever he be of the seed of their generations that has any blemish, let him not approach to offer the bread of his God. For whatsoever man he be that has a blemish, he shall not approach, a blind man or a lame, or he that has a flat nose or anything superfluous, or a man that is broken-footed or broken-handed or crooked-backed or a dwarf or that has a blemish or his eye or in his eye or be scurvy or scabbed or has his stones broken. No man that has a blemish of the seed of Aaron, the priest, shall come nigh to offer the offerings of the Eternal made by fire. He has a blemish. He shall not come nigh to offer the bread of his God. Doesn't mean we take him out and kill him. It means that they can't serve in the temple. Now, that's pretty important. God is the God of the Bible. He's a little different cat than the guy that you've heard about. You know, he's not the kind of guy that's kind and gentle and a sweet Jesus away in the manger. He's got certain standards, certain laws, certain things that need to be done in order to perpetuate the race, in order to make the world work. In economics, he has certain laws that makes the economy work and makes it work for thousands of years. Our economy is on the verge of collapse, and it will collapse like it did in 1929. Like it did in 1907, like it did in 1841, like it did in 1783, like it's going to in 2006, 7, or 8, something on that order. Why is that? We don't practice the economic laws that would guarantee that it will operate in perpetuity. And the same thing is true here with sexual immorality or sexual lawlessness. If you practice these laws, then you get a good result. If you violate these laws, then you get a bad result or death or sickness or disease or something else. You get a penalty. That's why it's so important that you learn these laws and then put them into practice. Now, I know somebody's going to say, well, nobody's going to tell me. Well, okay, I didn't come here to tell you. I came here to report to you, partner. Here's the report. You know, once you get the report, you can do with it what you want. Keeping in mind, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. If you can do the time, do the crime. Get after it. It's a lot of fun. You'll enjoy it. I never had a bad experience at Flo's Whorehouse. Always loved it. Fortunately for me, I never got VD, AIDS, gonorrhea, or syphilis. I ran the risk, but I won. Flew my airplane under the bridges and power lines from time to time. Some people got killed. I didn't. I ran the risk, and I won. Not a very good bet, in my view. And as an old man, I can tell you now that that was kind of stupid on my part. I wasn't always bright. Got a letter the other day that says, "My God, Mr. Gordon, you're wise." Well, I'd hope so. I'm getting older, but I wasn't very wise when I was 17. I had eternal life when I was 17. And then as I got older, I found out that wasn't true. All right, so I'm going to circle off genitals over here. I just told you that story over there. There's a law that concerns that. How about rape? You ever wonder about rape? Number 17 on my list here, but it's topic number 102 in my famous Mosaic Law book. So we'll turn over here to chapter 102 and take a look at rape. You know, you don't find any rape out in the pasture. That's right, none. No rape. You find rape among people. So in Deuteronomy 22, verses 23 through 27, if a damsel that is a virgin be betrothed unto a husband, and a man finds her in the city and lies with her, then you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city, and you shall stone them with stones that they die. The damsel, because she cried not, being in the city, and the man, because he has humbled his neighbor's wife. So you shall put away evil from among you. But if a man find a betrothed damsel in the field, and the man force her, and lie with her, and the man only that lay with her shall die. But unto the damsel you shall do nothing. There is in the damsel no sin worthy of death. For as when a man rises against his neighbor and slays him, even so is this matter. For he found her in the field, and the betrothed damsel cried, and there was none to save her. All right, so if you take a look at rape, and we have a lot of rape in America, it's kind of a two-edged sword. First of all, 30% of the rape convictions are false. So if you take a look at all the people that are locked up in jail convicted for rape, 30% of them are innocent. They didn't do it. They were identified by some woman that said, "That's the guy that raped me over there," and they were convicted as a result of it, but they're innocent. On the other hand, the punishment for rape is death, not prison. Well, according to the law of God. God, you know, when he designed this program, he says, if you got a guy over here who's raping a married woman, well, that's adultery. You take him out and stone him to death. If he rapes a young woman over here who's not married, if she consented to this sexual liaison over here, then you stone them both. If they didn't, if this woman cried out, "No, no, stop, stop." You ever notice that these rape crisis people, you know, they say, if this guy's going to rape you, don't cry out. Submit. That's the rule. Submit. Under the law of God, lady, you should be kicking and screaming. And if you don't, then you must have consented. And if you consented, then the punishment's death for you, along with the rapist. Now, I would submit, boys and girls, that if we practiced these laws, we would have a whole lot less rape. We would have a whole lot more men who are innocent stoned to death. So if you're locked up in prison on a bum rape rap like Joseph, if in fact you want to get out of prison, what you do is you start practicing this law while you're in prison. A lot of times I get letters from people that are in prison, and they all tell me that they're innocent and they want to get out. And they want to know how you do that. And they want me like 60 minutes, you know, to pro bono, go in and reopen their case, etc. Let me tell you how to get out of prison. There's an example in the Bible of a guy that was locked up on a bum rape rap. His name is Joseph. You'll read about him back in Genesis. And he was a man that obeyed God and kept his commandments. And God freed him from prison and then made him the number two, the vice president. You know, it's what we would call in the pecking order here in America, the vice president of Egypt. That was his reward for obeying God and keeping his commandments. If you're locked up in prison and you're innocent and you want to get out, you start practicing these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments in prison, right where you're at. You just take one law, two laws, five laws, nine laws, ten. Pretty soon you'll have all 133 of them, and you practice those. And then God will free you from prison. That's the way to get out of prison. All right, so that's rape. Very simple and straightforward. We used to practice that here in the United States. You catch a black man raping a white woman in this country, we take him out and lynch him on a telephone pole. All right. And then that's justice. It's incorrect justice, but it's just and it's justice. On the other hand, if you had a white man raping a black woman, well, that's like Bill Clinton. Why, that guy's a stud. That's okay. There's no problem with that, is there? Now, boys and girls, God has instructed us that we're not to oppress strangers. Black men in America are strangers, and they're not to be oppressed. So you violate the stranger statute. There's a second law that requires that we practice one law in this country. One law. We don't have one law for the blacks and one law for the whites, or one law for the rich and a different law for the poor. Now, that's the way we practice it under our civil law today. And the blacks are ticked off because they call that discrimination. Actually, it's the stranger statute, fellas. And then we don't apply the law equally. You know, we have one law for the rich and the mighty, and then we have another law for the poor. And that violates another statute over here, and we ought to change that. And we're not going to, but we ought to. And we ought not to be practicing that, but we do. And that's why we're hated and reviled around the world. All right, let me circle off rape here. I took punishment and run you through that one. Rape, number 102. Let me give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and or the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at area code 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers or of our sponsors or management or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our webpage, georgegordon.org, or call direct at 417-273-4967. In case I didn't give you the citation, that comes from Deuteronomy 22, verses 23 through 27, that deals with rape, R-A-P-E. Okay, let me pick out another one over here. Now, there was one here called menstruation I wanted to cover with you. I might not get to all of them if I don't. Here it is, number 79. I'll circle it off, number 79 in the famous Mosaic Law Book, chapter 79. We'll take M, menstruation. It's a health law that deals with contagious disease, bacterial infection, and viral infection. In Leviticus 15, verses 19 through 33, we read, "If a woman has an issue, and her issue in her flesh be blood," we call that menstruation, "she shall be put apart 7 days, and whosoever touches her shall be unclean until the even. And everything that she lies upon in her separation shall be unclean. And everything also that she sits upon shall be unclean. And whosoever touches her bed shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the evening. And whosoever touches anything that she sat upon shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the even. And if it be on her bed or on anything whereon she sits, when he touches it, he shall be unclean until the evening. And if any man lie with her at all, and her flowers be upon him, he shall be unclean 7 days. And all of the bed whereon he lies shall be unclean. And if a woman has an issue of her blood many days out of the time of her separation, that is, if her period runs longer than the normal 5 days, or if it runs beyond the time of her separation, all the days of the issue of her uncleanness shall be as the days of her separation. She shall be unclean. Every bed whereupon she lieth, all the days of her issue shall be unto her as a bed of her separation. And whatsoever she sits upon shall be unclean, as the uncleanness of her separation. And whosoever touches those things shall be unclean, and shall wash his clothes, and bathe himself in water, and be unclean until the even. But if she be cleansed of her issue, then she shall number to herself 7 days, and after that she shall be clean. And on the 8th day she shall take unto her 2 turtles, or 2 young pigeons, and bring them unto the priest to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall offer the one for a sin offering, and the other for a burnt offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for her before the Eternal for the issue of her uncleanness. Thus shall you separate the children of Israel from their uncleanness, that they die not in their uncleanness, when they defile my tabernacle that is among them. This is the law of him that has an issue, and of him whose seed goes from him, and is defiled therewith, and of her that is sick of her flowers, and of him that has an issue, of the man and of the woman, and of him that lies with her that is unclean." Well, it's a long statute. It's Leviticus 15, verses 19 through 33. Religious people look at that separation over there, and they say, "Oh my God, that's religious. Oh, that's sin offering time. We don't have to do that today." Well, boys and girls, there's about 450 diseases. 450 descriptions of symptoms that come from various and sundry pathogens. Now, sometimes it's a bacteria, sometimes it's a virus, like AIDS, that's a virus, and gonorrhea and syphilis, I believe, are bacterias, and hepatitis, you know, that's another infection, and some of these are sexually transmitted diseases. And these body fluids, you know, like semen, we talked about last time, or menstrual blood, which we're talking about now, these fluids, body fluids, contain disease pathogens, or the potential for carrying these disease pathogens. So your creator, this is the engineer. You know, this is like the Ford engineer who designs the automobile. And when you get a new car, you look in the jockey box and there's the instruction manual. And you get over here to the fuel system and it says, okay, this car burns this kind of fuel. And we like to be pretty cautious and careful about putting diesel in our gasoline-powered automobiles or gasoline into the diesel fuel tank of our diesel cars. And so in the process, while we're very careful about how we deal with our automobiles, we're not very careful about what we put in our mouths. And we're not very careful about the way we deal with the waste products. Now, for instance, your automobile has an exhaust system, and we like to be careful about what comes out the exhaust. We're not quite so careful about how we dispose of sewage. Not exactly clear to me why that is, but, you know, here's God now. The master engineer comes along and he says, now, I designed the sexual apparatus. I designed the penis. I designed the testicles. I designed the vagina. I designed the uterus and the reproductive organs. I designed the semen. I designed the menstrual fluid. I'm the designer of all of this. I'm the designer of the reproductive process. Now, in this process, little babies are born, and we say, oh, look at the miracle of birth. We get kind of sanctimonious about that. But we don't look about the same disposal of the fluids that are a part of this reproductive process. Semen is one of them, and menstrual fluid is another. To liken it to plutonium, I think, would be pretty apt. These are dangerous, life-threatening substances. Normal. They're natural, you know. Just as natural as that bull sticking his nose into the stream of urine coming out of that cow. Not exactly hygienic, but natural. And menstrual fluid is very natural, but boys and girls, it is a highly toxic fluid. Now, lest we go off the deep end here and get kind of religious and sanctimonious, I was talking to a guy, and he said, yeah, there's this religious guy over here, and when his teenage daughters are in their period, he has a little cabin out here, and he separates his teenage daughters, and they have to go into this little cabin, and his wife, she has to go into this little cabin. Excuse me, I didn't read that in that statute there, did you? And they do that because these women might sit on something. Now, boys and girls, here in America, we're pretty clean people, and we have what we call sanitary napkins. When I was a kid, they used to kind of disparagingly call, oh, she's got the rag on. I guess in the olden days before they had Kotex and so on, I guess they used to use old rags. You know, makes sense, I guess. But today, women, you know, don't bleed all over everything when they sit on the sofa. We try to be pretty cautious and careful, don't we, ladies? I mean, we're not getting our menstrual fluid on the sofa and on the chairs and tables and bed linens. And you know, I'm a married man, and I've got five children. I'm pretty familiar with this process. And I never did put my wife into a separate cabin, but my wife has always kept herself pretty clean. And this is a health and sanitation statute. Now, if this menstrual fluid were to get on the bed sheets, get on the sofa, it needs to be cleansed. It needs to be cleaned. This is a highly toxic fluid. Boys and girls, if you got plutonium on your couch, wouldn't you do something to clean it up? I mean, wouldn't you don a moon suit and do something? You know, you don't have to go to that kind of an extreme. You know, some religious people, they get kind of extremist. But by the same token, you shouldn't be taking this kind of casual. Should you be having sexual relations while your wife is in her menstrual cycle? The answer is no, 1,000 times no. In fact, there's a little statute right there that says you'll be unclean for 7 days. You need to separate yourself. You know, you could pick up some pretty nasty diseases from that menstrual flow. Would you go into a whorehouse and have sex with a prostitute who has AIDS? Well, boys and girls, having sexual relations with a woman who is in her menstrual cycle is about like going in and inviting disease. It's a, you know, now you may not get disease. I mean, you can go to the whorehouse and not get syphilis. But you certainly run the risk. And so God, you know, wanted to be very cautious and careful here, says, all right, now, I designed this, and my design mechanism over here has some things we need to keep in mind. Just like the Ford manual, you know, says change the oil every 2,000 miles or 5,000 or 10,000 miles. You know, little precautionary measure over here, you know, this oil gets polluted after a while and it doesn't lubricate as effectively, so we need to change the oil. So he says, okay, there's some things you have to do to maintain this product. And boy-girl relationships are great relationships, but they have to be maintained. And there are some hazards and there are some dangers that need to be avoided. And so here's a law, and he says you shouldn't be having sexual relations during this 5-day period. And he says, now look, what if this 5-day period lasts for 8? Well, you don't measure off 5 days and then say, well, we'll take up where we left off, boys. If it's 8 days, then it's 8 days. That's the breaks of the game. I'll tell you more about that tomorrow when we get to Song of Solomon and we talk about a woman or a wife in this case, a wife's duty of marriage. I'll get real down and personal now. And I'll tell you ladies over here the secret that all these old ladies knew. If you want to keep your husband at home, If you want to keep your airline pilot, lady, from bedding down all those fillies in Cape Town, I'll tell you how to do that tomorrow night. I'm going to get the Song of Solomon. Meanwhile, I thought I'd cover some of these statutes over here that deal with these criminal activities. We would be remiss if we didn't cover sodomy, bestiality, and whores. So let me just flip over here to number 112, sodomy. In the famous Gordon book here, sodomy, number 112. It's a health law. It protects you from AIDS, gonorrhea, syphilis, sexually transmitted diseases, and hepatitis. Now, masturbation, we talked about earlier, is not a crime. Masturbation is a natural, normal process like urination. And there's nothing in the scripture that prohibits masturbation. All right, so if it's not prohibited, then it's permitted. See how simple that is? Sodomy isn't. Sexual satisfaction or gratification between two males is prohibited by law. I know that the Congress and your state legislatures saw that God made a mistake here, and so they corrected God's mistake by passing legislation legalizing sodomy. But I just wanted to report to you that while that may be the case in your secular law, it doesn't do anything to protect you from AIDS, herpes, and VD. Now, if God had repealed that law, then he would have to repeal the penalty that goes with it. For instance, we used to have a law concerning booze, and it was called prohibition. But when we repealed the prohibition, we also repealed the penalty. See, the penalty was repealed also. So if the penalty is still there, then you can rest assured that the law, the statute, the judgment is still there. So in Leviticus 18:22, you shall not lie with mankind or as with womankind, because it's an abomination. It's the wrong use of the product. And Leviticus 20, verse 13, if a man also lie with mankind as he lies with woman, both of them have committed an abomination, and they shall surely be put to death, and their blood shall be upon them. So sodomy is a capital felony punishable by death. There shall no whore, this is Deuteronomy 23, verses 17 and 18, there shall be no whore of the daughters of Israel, nor a sodomite of the sons of Israel, and you shall not bring the hire of a whore, or the price of a dog, into the house of the Eternal your God for any vow, for even both of these are an abomination unto the Eternal your God. So you shall not pay your tithes upon your hire as a whore, and the price of a dog is a sodomite. Okay, so I just want to report that to you, that it's a criminal activity. Now, I don't want you to don't write me a letter now and tell me that I'm a homophobic and out of touch with reality. I'm a reporter and I'm reporting facts, and these are the facts from the Bible. You can accept them, you can reject them, I don't care. You're not going to affect me one way or the other. But I wanted to report to you so that you can make a better, more informed decision as to how you want to handle your life. And if you're a 15-year-old kid and some guy comes along and says, hey, listen, the sodomy is a lot of fun. Well, son, so is heroin. Heroin is a hell of a lot of fun. I don't deny that. But there's a risk that goes along with it. Risk. And I've never practiced sodomy, and I don't really know how much fun it is. I can't report to you firsthand. I can report to you from Flo's place. There was a lot of fun, a lot of excitement there. God, I loved it. I smoked Camel cigarettes for 9 years. I never had a bad puff. I smoked White Owl cigars. I can report to you that smoking is very pleasurable. God, I loved it. Drinking alcohol, that's pretty pleasurable at times. Not totally all the time, but some of the time. Now, if you can drink in moderation, and if you can hold your booze, you know, probably drinking's for you. But there are limitations to it, and God told you, he said, now, no drunk's going to enter into the kingdom. So he doesn't want drunks, but he wants people that can hold their whiskey. So he tells you in Deuteronomy 14 that during the holy days, you should drink some strong drink. So he's not a teetotaler, and he's not an abolitionist. And God's not an old fuddy-duddy. He thinks that having a good woman is a lot of fun, and you ought to indulge in having good sex with a good woman. And this good woman is described in Proverbs chapter 31 as being your wife. And in Proverbs 5 and 7, he tells you, you know, stay away from these strange women. Not that they're not fun, not that they're not pleasurable, but because there's a side effect over here that can get you killed. Same thing with whores, you know. Now, you girls out there, if you want to go out and learn how to be a whore, you should go into the whorehouse and then learn how to do it professionally, because I just mentioned to you a little earlier that men want to marry a Cinderella, but they want a French whore for a lover. And if you want to learn professional lovemaking, you learn that in the whorehouse and you make a lot of money. The reason men go to whorehouses, ladies, is because whores are better lovers than wives. Let me repeat that so that there's no misunderstanding. Whores make better lovers. They are better sexual partners than wives. Now, it shouldn't be that way, and you wives should be as good as or better lovers than whores and prostitutes. But you're not, and that's because you haven't been taught and trained. And I'll tell you that Aunt Bessie should have been training her daughters. And my granny should have been training her daughters to be lovers, because that's what God taught us in Song of Solomon, which I said I'd tell you about next time. But this thing of sodomy and whoredom over here are strictly prohibited. And there's one more in here called bestiality. I'm going to circle that one off over here. Sexual relations with animals is strictly prohibited also. I don't need to necessarily read it to you. Well, I guess I'll go back and I'll give you the citation. I remember on this whore thing and sodomy, that's Deuteronomy 23, verses 17 and 18, and Leviticus 20, verse 13, and Leviticus 18, verse 22. And there are New Testament scriptures, too, like Romans 1, verses 24 through 27, and Romans 9, verse 29, and then Genesis 18, 16 through Genesis 19, 29 tells you about Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, it's where we get the name Sodom. Sodom. Bestiality, I'll give you the citation. That's law number 8. It comes under B. They're in alphabetical order. Alphabetical order here. Jay Leno, every once in a while, he likes to make some snide remarks and jokes, you know, about bestiality. It's got to be one of the lower type activities in life. The penalty for it is stoning to death, and it promotes STD, sexually transmitted diseases. It's a health law. Whosoever lies with a beast shall surely be put to death, so it carries a capital punishment. Neither shall you lie with any beast to defile yourself therewith, and neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion. That's Leviticus 18, verse 23. And Exodus 22, verse 19. And if a man lies with a beast, he shall surely be put to death. Capital punishment. So there's some statutes. Now, next time, we'll complete the series here on sex and reproduction with the little book called Song of Solomon. Boy, that's a book for you to read. Preachers don't read it. It isn't something you want to talk about in polite society. But we'll talk about that right here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. Keep in mind that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement, and the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. And if you'd like more information about that homeschool, go to our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. We're about out of time. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night.